Welcome back, kids. Welcome back to the circus. Welcome back to the ever-evolving, ever-changing show, like a balloon animal. Do balloon animals change shape? Nah, that's a bad metaphor. It's a bad metaphor to start this off. If this is your first time listening, usually my metaphors are mildly better than that. If you guys are listening for the first time, go back and listen to some old episodes. You'll see kind of what I mean. You know, sometimes we do true crime. Sometimes we talk kind of, I don't know, today, maybe you can say today is going to be mental health, something along those lines. I have such a problem with categorization, which is probably why things are always changing, because I don't see the strict lines and borders around things that other people maybe do. Also, something I want to start doing at the beginning of these episodes that I never remember to do at the beginning. For those of you who maybe don't always make it all the way to the end, I just want to remind you that if you want to support this show, you want to support me, you want to support, yeah, you want to support my poor pronunciation, you can either give me a tip over on Ko-Fi or you can support me over on Patreon. And we're going to talk a little bit about Patreon at the end of this episode because there's an interesting experiment. I think it's interesting going on over there. But where I really want to start today is YouTube. Yeah, it's weird. You know, I don't actually watch that much YouTube, but I find that when I'm talking about things, YouTube comes up a lot. And I guess it's because of the way that I interact with YouTube. I usually open the app maybe once a day, and I just look and see what's on that front page, what's being recommended to me. This is excluding any time that I'm searching for something specific. But I usually just flip through, you know, maybe 10, 15 thumbnails of videos. If there's anything interesting, I watch it. If not, I close the app, done. So I might go 4 or 5 days without ever seeing anything I want to watch. But when I do watch something, usually it sticks with me because of that process. So maybe that's why it comes up more often than not. Well, the video that came up today in the feed was a Will Smith video. It said something like, I'm crying or I'm crying again or something like that. And I assumed maybe it had something to do with the reunion, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion, and that James Avery, the guy that played Uncle Phil, is no longer around. I figured maybe it had something to do with that. And I was of the age of a teenager when Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was on. So James Avery's Uncle Phil had a pretty big influence on me. And I think a lot of people of my generation as well. So that's why I clicked the video. I said, fine, let's have a little tears. Let's have a couple tears for James Avery today. But that's not what it was about. The video was about the Smith family, the whole family, Jada, Will, the three kids, all being awarded as a family, an award that Robin Williams' family created. And they give ever since Robin killed himself. Essentially, they've been giving this award out to somebody every year. And this year they chose the Smith family as a whole for all that they do. Not only in bringing laughter and joy into people's lives, but also all of the serious things they do, talking very seriously about how hard it is to be a human being. So very interesting to watch this. Because I'm watching it and I'm thinking about Robin Williams, of course. And Robin Williams, he played a very special place in my life. And I didn't really realize how special of a place he played in my life until he died, unfortunately. I guess you just always take for granted that somebody's going to be there. And then when they're not, you realize what a hole it is that's left when they're gone. Which is, I mean, it's kind of a strange thing to say about someone I never met, right? And that's part of the thing that I had to confront once Robin Williams was gone, was why am I so upset about this person that I never met? And I don't remember what year he died, but it's been a while since he died, and still, if I see something about him, it tears me up, it chokes me up. And I know that some of that was the movies that he was in were just, maybe I was the right age. You know, actually in the YouTube video, in the vlog, the Smith family talks about where they, each of them, connected with Robin Williams. For Jada and for Will, it was Mork and Mindy because of their age. For the kids, it was Flubber, Jumanji, and Mrs. Doubtfire. Now me, I'm kind of the age between their kids and between them. So all of that was it for me. And I started thinking about that, like I'm the perfect age for Robin Williams' career because I'm old enough to remember Mork and Mindy, yet young enough still to have watched those later movies, you know, like I said, middle career, not necessarily later movies. Later movies would be more of the dramas he did, but I watched those too as an adult. So I was the right age for all of it. And the thing is, I've never really said this before, but I've always really wanted to be funny. I know that sometimes I can be funny if I'm lucky, which is usually what it feels like to me. Like if I say something and people laugh, I always feel like I've rolled the dice. Like, oh, I'm hot today. And it'll be gone for a long time. I make myself laugh, but I think we all do that. So I think that Robin Williams was valuable to me because his ability to make people laugh was, it seemed like it was just his nature. You know, like there was no work involved. He couldn't stop himself. You know, like if you'd watch him on a talk show and he would go off on a tangent, or like the whole Aladdin movie, you know, all those ad libs, all of that, because he couldn't stop himself. So I think that I always looked up to that in a way, like, man, I wish I had a little bit of that, just a little bit of that. But when I was watching this video, it struck me that Robin Williams' name hasn't really faded from the social conversation since he died. You know, like when someone dies, of course, they're still, you know, their work, if they're a great artist or a famous celebrity, what they did still matters and they still get talked about. You know, like David Bowie still gets talked about. But Robin, the level that Robin Williams' name still comes up is not equal to a very famous dead person. It's equal to a living person. Like he still comes up like he's still alive. Like sometimes I forget that he's not. And because of that, I realized, I'm like, oh, he's not just special to me. He's special to, dare I say, everyone. Why? What did he do that was so different that he sticks with us? That he's still alive in some way. And Will Smith says something very, very wise in the middle of this video. He says that Robin Williams was a master of human connection. And then he says that laughing with someone is, and this is his direct quote, the fastest freeway out of being strangers. Wow. That's it, isn't it? Right? When we're with someone and we laugh, we bond. Will says that when we laugh, nobody looks good. You know, we all look ridiculous. So there's some kind of release there. You know, that social facade, that protection that we put up, laughter explodes it. It doesn't just turn it off, it blows it away. And we're sitting there, you know, I think right now is Eddie Murphy's laugh. Like, you're just that, you're doing something that's just not, quote, not human. You've just been freed of something. And when you're doing it with someone else, yeah, you bond because there's that border between you was gone and you begin to overlap. And maybe because Robin Williams couldn't help but continually make people laugh. Maybe because of that, we continually bonded with him over and over and over again, that he continued to strip away our pretense and expose us. And because of that, we can't let go of him because he's like, he's part of us. I mean, that's a big thing to say, but it's really like the loose ends have wrapped around each other and he's on the fringe of us. There's a release in humor, a freedom in it, but also a binding us together. But what else is it about humor? I thought a lot about that. You know, I was getting ready to take the dog for a walk right before I was getting ready to take the dog for a walk, I watched this video. So when I'm on the walk, I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about humor. Thinking about it so much that actually I forgot to turn on my headphones. You know, like, have you ever done that? You're thinking about something, maybe you get in the car and you drive like 15 minutes and you realize like you've been driving in complete silence for 15 minutes because you're just, your head is somewhere else. So that's where I was. And like, what is it about humor? And it's not just that, the bonding. I think it's also that humor brings us into the moment. You know, there is no past, there is no present. I mean, there is no past, there is no future. There's just the present when you laugh. There's just the experience that you were having at that moment and nothing else. You know, lately I've gone back to listening to vinyl records. And the reason I've been listening to vinyl is because I started to feel some kind of disconnect with my music. I've talked about this on Twitter before. Something about streaming music made me feel like I wasn't interacting with my music anymore. That sounds like a strange thing to say, but let me tell you a little something. When I was younger, and I'd buy cassettes, and then I would buy CDs. Either way, whichever the two I had bought, depending on the time it was. When I would get home, the first thing I would do, if possible, would be to take that tape or that CD, put it in, hit play, and then take out the liner notes and read the lyrics while I listened to the album for the first time. Read along. It wasn't necessarily because I was concerned about what was being said, but I have attention deficit. I didn't really know what the hell that was at the time, but I knew that reading this while listening to this kept me focused on the music. And I never felt like I really, like, if I ever got home, maybe I didn't have a chance to do that right when I got home. Maybe a couple of days, maybe a week had gone by before I'd sat down and read the lyrics while listening to the album all the way through. I never really felt like I owned the music because I didn't know it. I hadn't, I guess you could say I hadn't looked at the map. So I didn't have an idea of what the land, I didn't have a lay of the land. And I was starting to feel that way with streaming, that I wasn't, that I didn't own it. And when you, literally, you don't own it when you stream, right? You're just renting it. But I mean, I didn't own it in the sense that it didn't feel like my music. And I don't mean in the sense of possession, but I mean mine, like as in, yo, this is my song. This is my album. This is my favorite album. This is my favorite line. This is my favorite moment in this song. I didn't feel that kind of possession of it. It felt like, I don't know, like, you know, like when you, when you watch something like a commercial, you experience the commercial, but like once it's over, it's gone, right? You don't carry it with you unless it's a really good commercial. A lot of TV shows can be like that. You know, you watch some episodes, you don't remember many of the episodes, but you remember certain ones. Movies can be like that. But with music, you know, like music more than any of those mediums is, it's to me similar to the way I am with books, continually going back. But with albums, we go back to albums the most, theoretically. Like if you like an album, you don't just listen to it once and be like, I love that album. The end. We do that with movies. We do that with TV shows. Like I loved that show. Only seen it once all the way through. Well, most people do this with books as well. I don't, but that's because I realize the value of going back to something. And it's probably because of what I learned from listening to music. That every time I go back, I get more out of it. Because I change. And as I change, the experience changes. And sometimes you just love something. You ever hear a song and you're just like, put that on repeat. I would do that with streaming. That's one of the ways I think I was trying to grab at that sense of possession was I would hear a song and be like, wow, that's, you know, the song hit me. So I would just play it over and over and over and over and over again. Sometimes 10, 15 times. I'm writing it into my memory, right? So I canceled my streaming. I don't have Spotify. I don't have Apple Music. I don't have Tidal, YouTube Music, whatever the 500 other ways you can listen to music for money. I don't have any of them. When I want to listen to music, I need to be home. I need to be in my room. And I need to put a record on the record player. Why did I choose vinyl? There's not really a specific reason. I just started collecting vinyl a few years ago. I shouldn't even say collecting, but I just started buying a couple records here and there. Because, I mean, if you want to own physical music, like it feels like the vinyl is like the perfect manifestation of physical music. It's big, but it's thin, you know, so you can fit a lot in a small space, but you get a huge visual. You know, you get that huge album cover. And I have a ton of CDs still. The only reason I didn't go back to listening to CDs, which I totally would be willing to do, is I don't have a CD player. I don't own anything with a CD player. Not even my computer has a disc drive. Same for most of you, I'm sure, too. I still have cassettes, too. I just don't have a cassette player. So vinyl was the medium that I had music and a player. So been listening to a lot of vinyl. What I've also been doing is doing less of writing and note-taking and all the stuff that I do on a normal basis that involves taking words from my brain and putting them somewhere. I've been doing less of that on the computer, on my phone, and more in my paper notebooks. And I think that that's something very similar there. You know, I'm not advocating that physical is better than digital or vice versa. It has nothing to do with the difference between those two. It has to do with connection for me. And it has to do with present, being present. That when I'm listening to a record, I experience it more than when I listen to it streaming, you know, playing something out of the speaker on my phone. Not necessarily because of the sound difference, because, I mean, I've got one of those little all-in-one record players that sounds not that great. Sometimes the phone probably does sound better, but there's something about the experience that makes me hear it more. And part of it, too, is, you know, like a record, it comes to an end in the middle. So, you know, like if you have a longer play, you might get 30 minutes, but usually not. Far less than that. So you put it on, you hear 4, maybe 5 songs, and then click, it turns off because that's the end of the side. And you have to get up and go flip the record over. And then same thing happens again, click. And now you can either flip it back over and start again or put on another record. And something about that makes you more present because you have to be more active in the process. Whereas streaming, it's like YouTube, you know, like if you really want to, you can just hit play and it will just keep going and keep going. Passive, active. And it's hard to be present when you're passive. I never put that together. That's not even in my notes. I never even put that together before. But when you're passive, you're not here. You're somewhere else. And I realized too, like as I started writing these notes, that one of the things that I've been enjoying a lot, maybe more than I should, is on my Apple TV, there's an app called Pluto TV. And Pluto TV, it has, there's two sections of the app, essentially. There's one section with on-demand stuff, you know? That's the term they use. I'm not unaware of the fact that on-demand is a term for a cable company, not for streaming services. But you have streaming stuff, you know, like here's this movie, play, and it starts. Okay, streaming, on-demand, whatever you want to call it. But the other half of the app is what's called channels. And for them, channels very much are like cable. You know, it's live TV. There's no play. There's no pausing. There's no rewinding. There's no fast forwarding. And there are commercials. But what's really fascinating about what they do is the channels, about 80% of the channels, are dedicated to one television show, or sometimes it's even a theme. Like there's a James Bond channel, and all it does is play James Bond movies 24/7. But the TV ones are very interesting, at least to me. And the channel that I'm almost always watching is the Unsolved Mysteries channel. So I just turn it on, and it's usually in the middle of an episode or something. You know, like I said, there's no rewinding, there's no starting. It's operating without you. And I didn't really understand why I had been enjoying it. You know, like I understand I grew up with live TV, so maybe there's a little bit of comfort in that. But having, for years before streaming came out, having dreamt of and imagined, I would tell people this all the time. Can you imagine if you could just watch something and say, I want to watch this now, play it now? Like if you could be in control, like I was imagining streaming before streaming exists. Obviously, I was not the only one. There was plenty of people probably way further ahead of me on this that were already working on the logistics of it. But I did wonder, or have been wondering, why is Pluto TV so interesting to me? I said that interesting tonight. Pluto TV. My enunciation, the speech impediment leads me to strange and unusual pronunciations sometimes. Pluto TV has commercials, and I'm not in control of when things play. Why is that interesting? Why do I like that? And I think it's because it removes choice. You know, like I want to watch Unsolved Mysteries. There are times when I'm watching Pluto TV, I'm not necessarily sitting there watching it. These are usually the times where I'm doing something else and I want something that I can watch and not watch. You know what I mean? Like I think people do this with baseball a lot. You put on a baseball game and you watch. And then, oh, you're doing something else. And oh, you turn back around. Okay, cool. That guy's still at bat. It's different than a movie. You know, you don't want to do that with a movie if you've never seen the movie before, because you turn around like, what the hell's going on? You've lost the thread. So Unsolved Mysteries is perfect. Number one, because I've seen them all probably 30 or 40 times each, every episode. But I just turn it on. I don't have to think about anything. I don't have to decide which episode. And I've learned to appreciate the commercials because I can just get up and go to the bathroom. I don't know. I can do that with pausing too, but it's just, it's almost like it tells me like, hey, you know, now's a good time. So there's something about like relinquishing that control. And I think what it is not having to be in control of every aspect of something also allows me to be more present. I don't have to negotiate those choices. So I can focus on one thing. You know, I've felt a pull when I do these episodes, when I just plan, you know, like I've all of my notes. I talk always about how I have notes for these episodes. The notes are like you, for example, the section that we just went through right there. This is what my notes say. Vinyl, notebooks, Pluto TV, being present. These are not sentences. These are not extensive notes. They're just like markers. Like, oh, remember that thing? Oh, don't forget that thing. So I've felt a pull to do what I did last week, which was to use index cards. Because usually the ideas about what I want to talk about, they come in pieces, but they're not, you know, they don't come fully formed. Like, how's this all going to fit together? So index cards is great. Just collect those. This, and then I can sit down and go, all right, what's the story here? What's the arc? What's the order? You know, it's not always a story or an arc, but like, what's the order? What way can I talk about these things in a line that makes sense, that isn't jumping all around and confusing? But then I don't want to use index cards. I stopped doing it after that because I did it last week. I had like 20 cards. And then when I was done, I put them in the recycling bin. And then it hit me. I'm like, am I going to go through that many pieces of paper every week? And that just, I didn't want to do that. It seemed like a waste of paper. So right now I'm using Scalpel, which is it's actually a storyboarding, or not a storyboarding, but a brainstorming app for novelists. But it works really great. You just write some words, move them around. So that's what I'm doing to save paper. But I would prefer to be doing it on paper because there's just too many little things around this right now that I could click on to distract me. So let's go back to when I was talking about going on the walk. So I'm going on the walk. I don't have my headphones on. I'm thinking about humor. I'm thinking about why is humor important? All that stuff. And an interesting thing happened while I was walking is I found myself feeling something I hadn't felt in a while. A couple years ago, I don't know if it was over 2 years ago because I've had the dog for 2 years and this happened before I had the dog. But there was about a year period where I used to go for walks even before the dog. I would just go out and I would go for about an hour, sometimes 2 hours. And I had this feeling when I was walking. I don't know how to describe it, but it was like, every word that I'm going to say is not going to capture it, but it was like bliss or joy. Something would happen while I was walking. It wasn't just like the moment I walked out the house, I would feel that way. It would take me a while, sometimes 15, 20 minutes, and all of a sudden I would feel it wash over me. And it was just like this sensation of being alive. And it sounds so cliche when you try to describe these things because the more you try to give a detailed description of it, the more it's like this little wet seal, right? You can't grab it, or a greased pig. You can't hold on to it. So I'm walking today and I started to feel that again. And it confused me. It really confused me because I had kind of assumed that what I was experiencing before was was like a dump of endorphins or dopamine, whichever one happens after you exercise. Because this walking had come from me not exercising that much. Like before, like my walks would be like 15 minutes to the coffee shop. But like going for an hour or 2 hours was longer. Obviously, this is a very obvious statement. So I would always assume that this was a physiological thing, that my body was going, and releasing this thing. And I was experiencing this and looking around and everything was interesting. And I can't even explain like the feeling. It was almost like being on a drug, because I would walk and I'd be looking at houses and just like fascinated by the architecture, fascinated by, well, that's an interesting choice of a plant that they put there. Oh, I like that color. You know, like things I had never, that I was aware of, ever paid attention to, were suddenly fascinating to me. And I started to wonder, like, why am I feeling this again today? And I realized that it had something to do with the way I was holding my head. That when I started to walk with the dog, I would, you know, like, I didn't know what kind of training he had had before. I got him from the animal shelter, and he had been owned previously. He was 3 at the time that I got him. So I didn't know, you know, like what his habits were. He's a short little dog. So I got into the habit of watching him while I walked, which most people will have their dog walk beside them, or some people will let their dog walk behind them. I always try to put him in front of me. So like he's done this a few times where he sees like a lot of bird shit or something. And he tries to put his face into it and like roll around in it, because I guess to him, it smells wonderful. So I try to put him in front of me so that I can see if he's going to stop. I can prevent him from wallowing in bird shit so I don't have to wash him again. So I've gotten into the habit of looking down when I walk. But when you look down, when you walk, you don't notice anything. You know, you can tell if a car is passing or if a person's coming up around you on a bicycle, maybe. But I'm not looking at the houses. I'm not drifting. And I started to remember two books that I would say to this day are two of my favorite books. And these were books that when I would go on these walks, sometimes, not every time, but maybe one out of every 4 or 5 times I would go for a walk, I would listen to an audiobook. And both of these are books that I listened to an audiobook during that blissful walking period. The first one is A Field Guide to Getting Lost by Rebecca Solnit. And the other one is Architecture of Happiness by Alain de Botton. Field Guide to Getting Lost, pretty obvious why I was listening to that while I was walking. The book is about the experience and the value of being lost. And Architecture of Happiness is actually a very hard book to describe. It's a book that's kind of about architecture and the love of architecture, but it's also about how that relates to life, to being alive. So both of these are interesting because they're actually the reason that lifting my head up and looking around matters. Because getting lost, why is getting lost valuable? Getting lost is valuable because everything you're looking at that's coming in is new stimulus, right? When you're walking somewhere you know, you're walking in a neighborhood that you see all the time, you stop paying attention to it. It stops becoming valuable. Stops becoming stimulus. It becomes routine or mundane. But when you're lost, you know, you go for a walk and you're like, I'm really not sure where I am. I think if I keep going that way, I'll hit the main street. that time until you hit the streets that you recognize. You're seeing houses you've never seen before. You're seeing streets you've never seen before. Maybe people and dogs that you've never seen before. And you're taking it all in. It's like kids. Why do children learn so much when they're young? Because everything is new. So they're literally taking everything in. That's why we call them sponges, right? But as you get older, most of life becomes seen, been there, done that, seen that before. So we take less in. An Architecture of Happiness made me realize when I was listening to that book that houses fascinate me. Not even just houses, that architecture in general fascinates me and always has, and I never realized it. So when my head's up, I'm noticing things. I'm letting stimulus in. When my head's down, I've decided I've seen it all before. But what is valuable about that process? And I spent a fair amount of time experiencing it today and analyzing it at the same time. Like, why do I like this? What is it doing for me? And this is the conclusion I came to. I'm walking by a house, and this house has a particularly wide chimney. And on the top of the chimney, there's like this metal hood, I guess. It's almost triangular shaped on the top. And I'm looking at it, and I'm not thinking necessarily about the chimney. I'm not necessarily thinking about this hood. I'm looking at it, and without any volition on my part, the shape of it reminded me of a hood vent in a kitchen that I worked in like 15 years ago. So I'm looking at this chimney, and all of a sudden I'm having a memory of something from 15 years ago. And then I'm walking past this house, and I'm looking at the yard, and they have this nice grass, and then there's this small little strip around the grass. It must be like maybe 5 inches of dirt with just little plants in it. And something about that, the way that looked, reminded me of my aunt's house from when I was probably 10, 11 years old. And then there's another section over here by a busier street on my maybe 4 blocks from my house, where if you come around that block a certain way, you can only go one way to get to this. There's this weird section of, it's not really, it's a section of redwood trees. But the thing that's interesting about this is, so it's this section of dirt with redwood trees, and the section of dirt it's kind of triangular because the right side has a sidewalk, right? So between the sidewalk and the street is this dirt with the redwood trees in it. But the street is coming in at an angle. So it creates the dirt as a triangle, okay? So you have this triangular piece of dirt between me and the street. And then on the other side of me is a wall, because this street is busy. So they did one of those things where they built the wall behind everybody's backyard to soundproof from the street. So I'm in this weird little section that just feels like completely isolated from everything else. There's a wall on one side, and then just trees and dirt and cars on that side. So there's like, I'm in this weird little spot. And because it's redwood trees, it's not redwood trees, it's pine trees, because it's pine needles all over the ground. And, you know, like they're just brown, dried, dying pine needles. And not just a little bit, like we're talking about like in the forest where you can't see the dirt. It's just piles of pine needles. And something about that reminded me of what it was like in San Jose, which is where I live, in the early 80s. I didn't remember this, but there was a lot of those kind of trees and a lot of pine needles around then. Over time, they've taken them out and stuff like that. And that's when I realized this is why having my head up and looking around feels good. Is because I'm connecting. My brain is doing the thing that it does. It's taking things that aren't related and connecting them. It's continually making connections. And when our brain, like I had a friend who was a martial arts instructor. And he said something I haven't forgot. He said, your body works better the more you use it. Because that's what it's meant to do. Your brain works better the more you use it. And your brain feels better the more you use it. And not in necessarily a forced way, but in a natural way, making connections. So when you're walking and you're looking at things, whether it is in a place you've never been or a place that you've been before, but you've turned off that mundane switch, what you're doing is making connections. And so it feels, you feel in the moment, right? That's part of that being present. Because where you are is connecting to all these things, and you, all of a sudden you feel alive because things are functioning and things are moving. Now, typically I walk with the headphones on and I listen to podcasts. But I, like I said earlier, I forgot to turn on the headphones. And I realized that this was part of the reason that I was experiencing it as well. I had lifted my head up and I didn't have headphones on. So that stimulus, that extra stimulus was removed. Because it's very easy to walk and look down at the ground and hear something and be thinking about what you're hearing. It's not a bad thing, but it's just at a certain place, at a certain time, there's a cutoff switch. There is too much stimulus. That we reach a certain point of stimulus and it turns off. It turns us off. And I think that's what I've been feeling about streaming music and notebooks. And even having like tons of streaming apps and choices and movies. And I realized that that's what there's like this burden of like, there's so many choices. At a certain point, having everything or nearly everything, it degrades the importance of all of it. Because it no longer has a value. There has to be a certain novelty to something. You know, like, take for example, you have In-N-Out Burger and you have Cheesecake Factory. These are places in California. I don't know if Cheesecake Factory is anywhere else. I know In-N-Out Burger is in some states. But here's the difference. You go into In-N-Out Burger, there's like three things on the menu. You got a hamburger, you got a hamburger with cheese, and you got a double hamburger with cheese. And then there's fries, onion rings, and sodas. And there's other things you can do, you know, like animal style and all that, but that's not on the menu. You have to know that that stuff exists. The menu is 1, 2, 3, maybe 4. I don't know. Cheesecake Factory, on the other hand, you go to Cheesecake Factory, they give you a novel. The menu is, it's over 20 pages. And that's not an exaggeration. It is over 20 pages. Now, the food in both places is good. But more people talk about In-N-Out Burger than they talk about Cheesecake Factory. And I think the reason for that is, it's got nothing to do with food quality. It's got to do with the experience. Like going in, one, you got choices of 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 things. Okay, I'll take a, well, I like cheese, so, and 2 burgers sounds too much, and 2 patties sounds too much. Give me number 2. The end. Cheesecake Factory, on the other hand, you're like, oh, do I feel like fish? Maybe pasta? Oh, pizzas. They have pizzas. House salads. Burgers. Do I want a burger? Maybe I want a burger. Oh, then there's steak. There's some seafood here. By the time you figure out what you want, you've used up so much mental energy that I think it saps the experience. Because that mental energy that you're using, by the way, that's the same mental energy that you use to have the conversation with your lunch or dinner, companion. The person you're talking to is going to probably get a little less from you because of what you've just expended going through this menu. On Twitter, I think it was yesterday, the writer David Cadby, he asked if people, when people are deciding between whether to listen to vinyl or streaming, how they choose. And I told him I made it simple. I got rid of streaming. And him and I have been going kind of back and forth, just kind of chatting about that experience. And one of the questions he asked me was, or I guess it wasn't a question, it was a statement he made. He said, so you're just completely on vinyl now. I said, yep, 100% vinyl. He said, wow, you must have a big collection. And I looked over at my collection. I was like, no, it's kind of a small collection. It's just like one little cubby in this like shelf thing that I have. And then I went over and I did like kind of a quick count. And I have about 70 LPs. And I realized I was about to reply and say, no, I just have about 70. And I caught myself and I'm like, 70 is a lot. That's like a lot. It might not qualify as big collection, but it's certainly not a small collection. 70 LPs is a lot of vinyl. If I listened to one of those albums every day, it would take me 1/5 of the year to listen to all of those. That's a lot of music. So what we are reaching for with streaming is we just want to have everything at our fingertips, right? I understand the appeal of it. Somebody talks about this album, you go, I haven't heard it. You can just pull it up and listen to it. But there's something in that experience that's lost that makes us no longer present with it. And that's, I think, is anticipation. Wonder, right? I've talked about wonder a lot. Lam and I used to talk about wonder all the time. Sometimes what you imagine something to be in your head before you hear it is better than what you actually end up hearing. But you lose that experience. You know, this isn't to say that you shouldn't stream or whatever. I'm just saying that it's very difficult to maintain presence when you have near infinite options. You know, one of the things that David and I agreed on, not that we disagreed on anything else, but one of the key points that we agreed on was that because of vinyl being this thing where you have to go out and you have to get that when you go out and you get one or two, you know, you go and you go crate digging, or like he did, he went to like an estate sale. And you pick up one or two LPs and you bring them home. It's exciting. You're excited to own these things. You don't feel that when something new has been released on streaming. At least I never did. So it forces like this feeling of possession that I talked about before. And like I had 70. Now I have 72. I can go 72 days in a row now instead of just 70. You know, it's like, say you only had 4 songs and you just listened to those 4 songs over and over again. You'd be really stoked if you got a 5th song, right? Because, man, I've been listening to these 4 songs forever. You know, think about Desert Island. We say, what is your Desert Island album? Most people hate that question because we know that one thing forever might be too much. But I think what would happen there is our experience with music would be different, right? You wouldn't be playing music all the time when you're doing things like we do now, because we have so much music available to our fingertips. It will be more like what it was back in the day when people listened to nothing but vinyl. They'd sit down in the evening and they didn't turn on the TV. They'd sit down and they put on a record. And they'd listen to a record. It was an experience that they had an active relationship with it. The word that I keep going back to is ennui. It's a French word, but we use it in English. Ennui is a hard to define word. I found one definition that I liked. Listlessness and dissatisfaction resulting from lack of interest. The word ennui, it comes from this Latin phrase called that says mihi in odio est, which is kind of, it basically says I am in hatred. Or I am in hatred, essentially. But I think what's interesting about that is the hatred is not a rage against something type of hatred. You know, like when you hate someone or you hate something, it's not that I am feeling hate. It's I am in hatred. In other words, you are in this state of everything being repelled from you. It's the best way I can say it. Here's another definition that I liked. A feeling of weariness and disgust, dullness and languor of spirit arising from satiety or want of interest, tedium. I'm struck by arising from satiety. If you don't know what that means, satiety, that's the feeling of being satisfied. That's the state of being satisfied. That's what strikes me about this definition is a dullness or a weariness or a disgust that comes from being satisfied. Maybe that's what all of the problem that I had with all this stuff, why I felt like I needed to pull away from it, is because when everything is accessible to us, we're constantly in a state of okay. Not good, not great, not bad, not awful. Okay. We're on a plateau. And then that state of continually and sustained satisfaction leads to dullness, disgust, and weariness. You know, we might confuse, when I talk about ennui here, we might confuse that with boredom. Well, boredom comes from bore. You know, don't be a bore. Well, what is a bore? A bore is the thing which causes ennui. So what that actually means is that we have a poor understanding of boredom, because boredom would be the state of being a bore. Therefore, boredom is not the state of being bored, but boredom is the state of being boring. That boredom, you are the actor in boredom. Something is not acting upon you. A photographer by the name of Ruth Burke once said, "Only boring people get bored." When I was learning Shakespeare and, you know, all the remedial English that we learn in high school and college, ennui came up. And I remember at the time, I can't find any proof of this, but I distinctly remember at the time that the way ennui was described to me was middle-class discontent. That's something about being at a state or a place, a ranking in society, middle class, not lower class, not upper class, but in the middle, was synonymous to that state of everything being okay for a really long time. And then you become bored. And this is true. I live in the biggest city in California by size, by population, I believe, San Jose. In the middle of Silicon Valley, right? there's a lot of businesses. Now we're gonna talk about this pre-COVID because obviously everything is different. We're in a 3-week lockdown right now, so we're not talking about right now. But before this, when I was younger and we used to go out all the time, we would always try to think of, you know, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? And we always had trouble with coming up with something to do. And something that people would say over and over again is San Jose is boring. Now we have, I'm going to just take a guess. We probably have 30 movie theaters. We have theaters for like actual plays and on stage acting. We have our art galleries, lots and lots of art galleries. We have tons of parks. We have at least, we have 4 malls. We have an amusement park. We have, I mean, the list of things that we have available to us. We have roller skating rings. We have ice skating rings. We have lots and lots of bowling alleys and billiards rooms and bars, lots of bars and lots of restaurants. And lots of shopping, lots of bookstores, coffee shops, hundreds. But San Jose is boring. San Jose is not boring. We were boring. We were boring because we had so many options. There were so many different options that were good, not great, not awful. Good. There are so many good options that the options no longer differentiated themselves. And because they no longer differentiated themselves, the difference between picking one over the other meant very little, which means that the process of choosing something to do is extremely difficult, like that Cheesecake Factory novel. And so instead of admitting that and realizing that, we just said it was boring. You know, Thailand is not the richest country in the world, but it's called the Land of Smiles. There's something about not having everything that makes life more valuable. That's why being present is so important. Because being present is appreciating not everything, it's appreciating what is in front of you. It is appreciating what you are in. And that, going back to the beginning, I think that is part of what makes humor so valuable. Because humor steals you away from your burdens, your choices, and your complexities. It literally reaches into life, grabs you and pulls you out of it. That when you laugh, like when you have an orgasm, everything else in the world disappears. There's only one experience in that moment. And maybe that's why the jester in ancient kingdoms, why the jester was valued. Because the jester was the only person that could achieve that, that could give the king and the other people in the court that relief where everything disappears. And that experience feels so good. And like I said at the beginning, it connects us to each other and in turn to the Joker, the jester, the comedian, the blue genie. It connects us to them as well. So we trust them and we love them. And we miss them, so we keep them alive. Yeah. All right, well, that's, I don't really know where to go from that. If you enjoyed this, I mentioned earlier I was going to talk about Patreon for a second. If you enjoy this, then you will enjoy the experiment that I'm doing on my Patreon. It's a little bit different than this in the fact that I had a general, like I said, I had some notes and a general arc of where I was going to go with this. But what I've been doing on Patreon is I've been doing about 45 minutes every day with no notes, just turning on the microphone and talking for about 45 minutes. I'm doing it over there. I'm doing it to teach myself something. If you go listen to the episodes, I talk about it probably too much. I don't know how long I'm going to keep up the everyday, but I do think I'm going to keep up the practice of doing that. Maybe eventually it will, you know, degrade to a once a week or twice a week thing. But right now I'm doing it every day. I gave it a fancy name just because I like naming things. I called it Fill the Dead Air, as in fill the dead air of the radio, because that's the mindset that I'm trying to keep over there, which is pretend like you're on the radio, the microphone's on, and you can't stop. Because I think that it helps me move through these notes more organically instead of doing what I've done in the past before, which was filling the notes up with more than just one or two word clues. I start putting bulks of text up here and then I just end up reading. I don't want to do that. I want to go through this in the moment. So doing that over there in a state of panic because I don't know what I'm talking about or what I plan to talk about, it's a muscle that I'm trying to exercise. So if you're interested in that, you're interested in hearing more, become a patron. Support the work that I'm doing in front of this microphone, which it is, believe it or not, it is work. I enjoy it. It's one of the few things in life that I could apply the word work to and also the word enjoyment to. As for everything else, if I'm saying things like as for, that means that my brain is turning off. I'm at the end of this. So thanks for tuning in. Hey, you know, do me a favor too. Tell somebody about this show. If you're enjoying this, you like this format that I'm doing right now, tell somebody. I don't pay for advertising and all that junk. I rely on organic. And the organic, that's you. So be organic and share with a friend.